Welcome back to Administrative Static. Mark Chenoweth and Janine Yunus with you. And we are joined by our colleague, Senior Litigation Counsel, Greg Dolan, Greg, before we dig into this this latest sort of Federal Circuit, a case that you've taken an interest in, I think you wanted to offer some special greetings.
Sure. This week we have a special event. One of the Federal Circuit judges and our client, the Honorable Pauline Newman, is celebrating her 97th birthday and in full vigor with all of her faculties fully intact. And hopefully she'll stick around for quite some time.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, well before her 98th birthday, we'll have some good news for her on the resuming of duties front. But today we're going to talk about an amicus brief that you filed in a case called Chestek v. Vidal, Director of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. And this is something we don't do all the time at NCLA. You're filing a brief urging the Supreme Court to grant cert in this case. So why is this case worthy of a cert grant? First of all, tell us what the issue is, and then why is it worthy of a cert grant?
So let me actually take it in reverse order, because for anyone who kind of just looks at the top line, they might think, what a silly case. It's about a rule that requires every trademark applicant to properly notify the patent. It's not just the patent office, it's the patent and trademark office, so they do both, to notify them of their domicile. And one might think, like, well, who cares? Just file a small paperwork. It's not that big of a deal. But the issue in this case, and that goes back to your first question, is whether the patent and trademark office can promulgate such a small rule without public input. And for most agencies, the answer is generally yes, because most agencies, they do what's called kind of substantive rules, where they have essentially a force of law. They said, you know, you cannot sell this device, or you must, you know, pay this amount of like fees or whatever.
Right. Else. Put a warning on it or
right.
something.
And so that affects your legal rights. But the patent office.
And those are substantive rules that have to go through notice and comment rulemaking.
They'll have to go through notice and comment precisely because there are penalties if you don't follow them. You may be subject to significant fines. You may even go to jail, et cetera. But patent office has been held for decades, simply does not have that authority. Patent office can only do these procedural rules. And again, in this case, the procedural rule seems to be very silly. But the thing of it is, there was a congressman, I believe it was Henry Waxman, who used to say that if I let you write substance on any issue and you let me write procedure, I will beat you, and he used more subtle language, I'll beat you every time. And precisely because procedure, especially in a place like patent and trademark office, has potentially enormous impacts on whether or not you get your trademark or you get your patent, whether or not you get to keep it. For example, how the patent office interprets your patent claim and how it processes it, it's purely procedural, but it's a matter of like, do you get it or do you not get it? So it has a lot of substantive outcomes. And so Congress in 1999, realizing that, said to the patent office, you can still only do procedural rules, but you gotta do them under Title V, Section 553, which is the notice and comment one. Now, weirdly enough, Section 553 says you don't have to do notice and comment for procedural rules, and so you might think this is inconsistent. But if you look at what Congress was trying to do, at the legislative history, kind of how—
And by the way, that's what the Federal Circuit said below.
Yeah, the Federal Circuit said below, said like, sure, we have this new provision that Congress finally put into the Act 40 years after they created the patent. Well, not created, but created the patent office in its current iteration. The Patent Act goes from 1952. And basically, it's federal. Yeah,
originally, it was the Secretary of State issued patents, right?
Secretary of War and Attorney General. Okay. Thomas Jefferson bitterly complained about how 90% of his time is spent examining patent applications. But
he took his job seriously.
He did. But the point is Congress affirmatively decided that patent office shouldn't be this kind of, weird entity in a federal government that has a lot of effect, whose rules have create a lot of consequences for the public, measured in billions of dollars, but without any public input. And so in 1999, Congress explicitly said, follow Title V, Section 553, and the Federal Circuit says, oh, that's just mere surplusage. That means nothing. Congress, debated this. Congress voted on this. And according to Federal Circuit, that means nothing. And so we filed an amicus brief basically making two points. One, you got to do your job interpreting the statutes. Every word has meaning. And sometimes maybe that meaning is hard to discern. And sometimes, you know, the statute is convoluted. And so in this case, it may be somewhat convoluted because it says you got to follow notice and comment, whereas the notice and comment section says, well, you don't have to do notice and comment for procedural rules. So it seems kind of, zero sum. Both those things can't be right.
Yeah.
So, but there's a way to reconcile it. As we said in our brief, it's a very superficial conflict. What Congress was trying to do is saying, although you can only do notice and comment because your rules have such profound effect, because you can only do procedural rules, but because they have such a profound effect, even though other agencies don't need to do notice and comment, you guys should.
For your procedural rules
because they are so important. And then the second argument we made is kind of broader, and so that perhaps, Mark, answers your question as to why do we get involved in, A, such a silly rule and also at a cert stage as opposed to after it's been granted. Because if Federal Circuit is right, the Patent Office, and Patent Office itself says that its work affects about $8 trillion worth of GDP on a yearly basis. That's with a T, trillion dollars. And it would leave the
Patent Office. That's more than the Biden administration's student loan forgiveness.
That's true.
That's a real number.
So if Federal Circuit is right, that leaves the Patent Office kind of uniquely an agency supervised by only one person. There's not a commission where like different views get a bit of push and pull. Director can do basically whatever he or she desires and without any public input. And so that's just a very, very bizarre way to run a government agency. So we urge the Supreme Court to take this case and tell the Federal Circuit that when Congress amends the statute, it does so for a reason. And you can't just ignore statutes that are, you know, you don't want to read.
Right. Well, it just seems like there's a real threat to democratic self-governance here. If the Patent and Trademark Office, if the court doesn't grant cert here, then the Patent and Trademark Office is going to just be able to sort of write its own rules without any input from the public.
Exactly. And, you know, that was kind of how it ran from 1952, since the Congress passed the Patent Act, until 1999. And something, Congress thought that something was awry. And so it said, like, well, no, you got to do notice and comment. And weirdly enough, Patent Office itself recognized, for at least for big rules, they have to do notice and comment. And the Federal Circuit basically says, no, you don't.
So I'm curious how this case ended up going to court. Was someone actually negatively affected by the...
Yeah, so Chestek is the petitioner here. They filed an application for trademark registration without listing properly their domicile and not disclosing whatever the Patent Office says they have to disclose. And on that basis alone, so it wasn't that their trademark wasn't good enough or was preempted, but on the basis that they didn't comply with this procedural rule, the application was denied. They appealed it to the Federal Circuit for review of that, both the substantive denial but also the rule under which it was denied. And the Federal Circuit said, you know, we defer to the Patent Office. This seems fine.
And they don't let you just revise the application? And
I think they do, but I think the whole point was they wanted to say, like, we don't have to revise it because this rule is unlawful.
I see.
So, yeah, I think the rule seems silly in which it's really like, you know, filling out a couple more lines, but, you know, it's a principle of a thing.
Yeah.
Why are you making a federal case out of this? Well, because
it's
principles.
Right. These principles are important, and in some sense, maybe it's easier to make a federal case out of this, where it is, you know, simple and easy, and again, like I said, maybe silly, whereas worrying, like, taking up a case that, for example, has some very complicated patent that has, you know, you have to figure out, like, well, would it have been granted otherwise or not, because...
Right.
Who knows what, you know, what prior art there might exist. And so...
Well, and it might look like the court's trying to sort of sub rosa decide a different issue.
Exactly.
Or,
this one
or
is
achieve
a, very,
a different result.
Right. This one is a very clean issue. Kind of... There's not much question as to whether or not the trademark would have been granted otherwise, et cetera.
Right. So a good vehicle is what we would say in cert lingo.
And, you know, apparently we're not the only one who think that, because when I first started writing this brief, I thought... Is it really cert worthy? I mean, it's such a small issue. But so as I got into it, I realized that there is this principle. But other groups, I think Cato wrote a brief. There's three others. I don't remember all of them. But there's, you know, four or five briefs at a cert stage. That's not nothing, especially for a case dealing with trademarks. It's a very small bar. So it's not affirmative action. It's not anything where you would expect 50 or 60 briefs. So I think four or five briefs is a solid showing.
Yeah, well, it's certainly enough to get over the bar that that requires, if I understand correctly, requires the whoever is in charge or whoever gets assigned the case from the cert pool, they have to write the long form memo instead of the short form memo about whether or not the cert should be granted in the case. So that that apparently redounds to improve the chances of a cert grant. So, so the Supreme Court is being asked to clean up the Federal Circuit's mess once again.
Once again, the Federal Circuit lost twice this year in before the Supreme Court. One time 7-2, one time 9-0. They don't have a very good record. Now, you know, to be fair, I think Supreme Court generally reverses more often than it affirms. And Federal Circuit doesn't have a competitor. But still, they, over the last few years, they've consistently been on a losing end. And that does say something about, you know, the problems that are inherent within the Federal Circuit as it's currently operating.
Do you think the court is more likely to grant cert to cases coming out of the Federal Circuit just because circuit splits are less likely?
I think nowadays maybe so. It used to be kind of in the early 90s to early 2000s, in that sort of decade, the Supreme Court took a very hands-off approach, saying, like, it's just all patents, it's all complicated, we don't really have anything to do with this. And I think for about 15 years, there was not a single cert granted, at least in a patent case. And I think as the Federal Circuit took the message, oh, we can do whatever we want, we will never be subject to review, Supreme Court said, no, wait a second, you will be subject to review, and we got to rein it in your kind of frolics and detours that you're taking, inconsistent with other courts, even on things like procedural matters.
Yeah. So who is Chestek's counsel here?
Chestek counsel is Andrew Grossman. He is with
Baker-Hostetler.
Baker-Hostetler. I was going to say Baker-Boss, but I think they've merged, so I think he's Baker-Hostetler now.
I don't think they've merged, but it is.
Oh, it's a different Baker.
Okay. A different Baker.
Different Baker. So I think he's with Baker-Hostetler. So he's the lead counsel, and
fantastic.
We'll work with him.
Well, thank you for bringing this case to our attention. Chestek v. Vidal, pending cert at the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll keep you posted on what happens here.